I'm Bex, and welcome to the Week Junior Show. Today, I'm joined by three of the team from the Week Junior, the magazine making sense of the world for 8 to 14-year-olds. Today, we've got editor Felicity.
Hello.
Writer Flora.
Hello.
And assistant editor of the Week Junior's monthly science and nature magazine, Kieran.
Hello.
This week, we'll be talking about going back to school, how mental health has affected people during lockdown, and the secret lives of sharks. Plus, we'll have a debate all about authors. But before all of that, seeing as we are talking about going back to school, it's a big week. I want to know, what was everyone's favourite school subject? Felicity.
I think mine would have to be history. I think history was my main passion, and then I went on to university to read it. So, yeah, history for me.
Any particular time that you enjoyed the most?
Ooh, that's so tricky. I really like learning about the Victorians. So I think I would go for Queen Victoria and what happened under her reign.
Yeah, the Victorians were so good. I agree with you. Flora, how about you?
Well, I actually chosen maths, even though I wasn't particularly good at maths. But I had a really great teacher who was called Mr. Albertine. And he was quite strict, and he just gave us a lot of stuff to do. So the hour or whatever it was always went very quickly.
Maths is an interesting choice. It's my least favourite one, but I'm impressed you've got there. Kieran, how about you?
I've gone for English, particularly the sort of creative writing aspects of English I always loved.
I've got to say, we are on the same page there, Kieran. That was always my favourite as well. Did you write lots of stories? Did you write fake newspaper articles getting you ready for your current career?
Oh, absolutely. I always did that. And then I liked to, in my spare time, take, obviously, photos of my toys to illustrate my beautifully written stories.
Wow, that's really one step beyond. I'm impressed by that. Right, so I want to find out, what is everyone's favourite fact from this week? Felicity, what have you found out about?
I've learned that the world's tallest known tree is a redwood in California known as Hyperion, and it stands at a whopping 115.7 metres tall, which is huge.
I also love the name Hyperion. That sounds pretty exciting, right?
Very cool.
Big fan of that. Flora, how about you?
I've got another name-related one. It's that the Atlantic Ocean is named after the god Atlas from Greek mythology.
Oh, that's just good knowledge. That's the kind of stuff that will come in useful at some point, right?
Exactly. Take it to the playground with you.
Oh, brilliant. Kieran, how about you?
I learnt this week that the largest school in the world has more than 56,000 pupils.
How do they fit in the classroom, Kieran?
I suspect it's one very big classroom.
And now it's time for Real or Rubbish, where you tell me a story and I have to try and figure out whether it's true or false. Now, tell me, Kieran, what story have you got this week?
This week's Real or Rubbish is about the state of Mississippi in the US, and the news is that it is changing its flag to a bold new design that features a giant mosquito surrounded by a circle of stars. So there was a competition that was set up to design a new state flag, and around 3,000 people sent in their entries, but the winning entry was from a chap called Thomas Rossetti, who created a flag that features an insect at its very centre. He works on the Yazoo River in Mississippi, and he says mosquitoes are everywhere and are terrible, but he still wanted to give them the limelight of his creation. So is this story a real or is it a lie that needs to be swatted away?
Why would you put a mosquito on a flag if you hate it? It's an odd choice.
But it summarises his experience of the state.
Yeah, but that's... I was going to say something, but I can't think of the right example of it. But that's like me loving something, but also just highlighting the one thing about it I hate and then making a banner about it. That seems weird. Why would you put... And also, just in general, flags are meant to be colours, maybe some stars, perhaps a flower. A
Tell that to whales. They've got a dragon.
Oh, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, sorry, whales. Tell that to whales. As if that's won the argument. At least dragons are exciting and mythical. Mosquitoes are mean and stingy and bitey.
I suppose that's true, but in the defence of mosquitoes, they play a very important role in our ecosystems. Without them, everything would come crumbling down. So possibly he's, you know, doing a little shout-out to the ever-forgotten insect.
Oh, you can tell somebody works for the Science and Nature magazine, can't you? Oh, man. Right, well, I'm going to have a think about that, because I just would not be able to fly a flag with a mosquito on in good conscience. But hey, I guess I don't live in that state, so maybe, just maybe, I don't know it too well. But I'll have a little think about that. And if you've not read your copy of the magazine yet, feel free to make your guess before the end of the show. So now it's time for our three favourite stories from the week. Felicity, what is the big one for you?
The big story for me is our main news story, and it's also our cover story, and it's all about pupils heading back to school for the start of the autumn term. Well, not all pupils, because schools in Scotland have been open since August, and pupils in Northern Ireland return to school this week. But for most schools in England and Wales, they'll be going back in September, and the Prime Minister Boris Johnson has made this announcement saying that it's really important that young people in the UK do go back to school, because, you know, obviously this year has been really weird and strange and crazy with lockdown, with loads of young people having their education disrupted by the pandemic. So yeah, it's the start of a brand new term, and that's what we decided to focus on.
It's kind of exciting because, I mean, brand new terms and brand new school years mean big new starts. But yeah, this could be a bigger and weirder start for a lot of students, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's going to be weird for everyone. And I think it's going to be a lot of mixed emotions, and in some ways exciting to, like you say, start a new term, new stationery, sort of see your friends again. But like you say, lots of things are going to feel very different. So there are going to be lots of guidelines in place to keep everyone safe from catching or spreading the coronavirus. And this will include all sorts of things like more hand washing and keeping students apart. And in some places you might have to wear a mask. So it's definitely going to be very, very different. But I suppose the main thing is that everyone's all going to be in this together. You know, it's a sort of weird start to the school year, but everyone's going to be in exactly the same place, trying to keep everyone safe and hopefully get on with a brand new exciting school term under very strange circumstances.
Yeah, and I know lots of teachers have been working really hard to make sure that it all feels okay and normal and safe as well. And also just starting a new school year is always really exciting. Finding out what your brand new teacher is like, finding out about what is going on at your school, finding out what projects you're doing that year as well. So it's pretty exciting to go back to school, really.
Exactly, lots to look forward to, yeah.
So Flora, tell me about you. What have you been finding out about?
I've been finding out about anxiety. So I'm sure that a lot of us know what it feels like to be anxious. So start of term might be a good example. You might be feeling anxious before you go back to school for the first few days, maybe before an exam or before you give a speech or something. And anxiety is a very normal feeling. It's a natural thing to feel. But if it starts to get in the way of everyday life, then it can become a bit more of a problem. However, a recent study by researchers at Bristol University have found that anxiety levels have actually dropped during lockdown. So they were looking at data from more than 1,000 students in secondary schools across southwest England, and they found that 45% of girls and 15% of boys said that they felt anxious during lockdown. And now this compares to the same time period last year, where 54% of girls and 26% of boys said they felt anxious. So that's quite a drop. And the researchers said they were quite surprised by the news. I guess you might think that lockdown would make people more anxious, but there were sort of various reasons why they thought. One of the reasons could be to do with the sort of pressures of the school environment, and they've been advising schools, you know, sort of how to cope better with people's sort of mental well-being in schools. And I guess it's also worth saying that if you are feeling anxious about anything, the NHS has some really good advice to help you cope. So just a couple of examples would be talking to someone that you trust. It doesn't have to be a parent or a guardian. It can be a friend. Anyone that you trust, really. Also writing down why you feel anxious. I think sometimes it can be just a kind of tangle in your head of lots of different feelings and thoughts, and actually just writing things down can sometimes make you feel a bit better. And then writing maybe also the things that you can do to make yourself feel better. Maybe, you know, go for a walk or read a book or listen to some music or something.
That is really, really good advice, Flora. I'm really surprised about that dropping during lockdown. I thought it would have gone higher. But you're right, I think sometimes writing stuff down, just getting it out of your head is really helpful. Kieran, how about you? What have you been finding out about?
Well, have you ever wondered how sharks make friends?
Yeah, every day of my life, yes.
Yes, well, because I sort of always assumed that sharks are solitary hunters. They sort of swim around on their own. They're not particularly bothered by making friends with other sharks. They're just sort of after their own food and sort of live their lives independently. But it turns out that that is pretty much the opposite of what is true. There was a new study that's just been carried out over the course of 4 years, and it was looking to see how sharks interact with each other. And the results of the survey show that they're actually very good at forming their own friend groups and social networks, and that they rely on those networks quite a lot. So the research was carried out on the Palmyra Atoll, which is around 1,000 miles southwest of Hawaii, which is a US state in the Pacific Ocean. And the scientists attached cameras and sound monitors and transmitters to the animals to track their movements over the course of 4 years. And they were looking specifically at grey reef sharks, which is a species that lives in that area. And while it's always been known that sharks do encounter each other from time to time, it was always thought that they would only do that when they were feeding. So if there was a big source of food, the sharks would come together, they would gobble it all up, and then they would go their separate ways. But this new bit of research shows that actually they sometimes just want to spend time together even when there is no food required or involved. And what was particularly interesting about this was that the researchers were able to see that the same sharks would meet up with each other at regular intervals. So as opposed to them just sort of encountering strangers or mild acquaintances, they had these friends that they would meet up with possibly every morning after they'd been out hunting, and then they'd go their separate ways and then come back together again. And whilst this is behaviour that's similar to that of birds and mammals in the wild, it is a different reason that they're coming together, because they aren't just coming together to hang out and to have a good time together. It's thought that they're actually sharing information with each other about where the best places to find food are. So they're helping each other to survive, as opposed to it just being, let's hang out tomorrow morning kind of thing. So I thought it was really interesting that, sharks have these secret friends groups that we know nothing about.
I like that, because it makes me feel more connected to sharks.
Yeah, exactly. And perhaps, you know, I think sharks have a bit of a bad reputation. We think of them as the villains of the oceans, whereas actually they are just like every other fish. They're just doing their best to survive.
And having a sociable time at the same point.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing. All right, well, three really big stories for this week. Now, speaking of big things, it's time for our big debate. This week, we're asking whether books should only use an author's real name. So who can tell me a bit more?
That would be me. So to celebrate its 25th anniversary, the Women's Prize for Fiction, which gives out awards to female authors, has unveiled a project which they're calling Reclaim Her Name. Now, this is a collection of 25 books that were written by women who used male pen names. So a really good example is a very famous novel by the Victorian author Mary Ann Evans, but she published it under the name George Eliot. And there are lots of reasons why some women chose to do this, and sometimes it was because they thought they'd have a better success of publishing their work if people thought they were a man rather than a woman. But all these books, there's 25 books, and they've all been published with male pen names for all sorts of reasons. And now there's this project to republish them with the original women's name. So do you think this is a good idea or not?
Interesting. Okay, so this is going to be Flora versus Kieran. First up, I'll be challenging Flora to say why books should use the author's real name. Flora and Kieran, do you both have timers nearby?
I do.
Sure do.
Excellent. So I guess, Flora, when you're ready, take it away.
Okay, so someone's real name is a big part of who they are, and no one should have to change their name to achieve something like publishing a book, for example. And with a book that's so successful, like Middlemarch, this is really important because it serves as an example and an inspiration to other writers. So changing your name just to suit the society you live in, it's actually a form of lying, I think. And the best books tell the truth about life and what it means to be a human. So I would argue that in putting George Eliot's real name on the spine of her book, Mary Ann Evans, you're giving it a greater ring of truth and therefore a better experience for the reader. And the book is actually all about the reader, not the writer. Once the writer has published the novel and it's out in the public, they're not part of it anymore. And I feel like in having a pen name, the writer is trying too hard to sort of keep control of it, because we're just really interested in who their true identity is rather than the characters and the world of the story.
Oh, a lovely, well-timed debate there. That's going to be difficult to top, I would say. Kieran, are you ready to take it on?
I'll give it my best go.
Whenever you're ready, take it away.
There are all sorts of reasons why authors should be able to use a pen name if they wish. So to stick with the Middlemarch example that we've heard about already, Mary Ann Evans made clear that she never wanted her name to be printed on her book. She said that at the time. She always wanted to be quoted as George Eliot. And, you know, you could argue that that was because of the situation that she was in and the way the world was at that time. But I think it's unfair for us now to change that against her clear wishes. But I think there are other reasons why pen names are good things too. So J.K. Rowling, who is clearly one of the most successful authors of the 21st century, used her initials instead of her first name when she first published, as she was told that it would result in a better chance of people picking up her book. And I suppose in some ways that's a pen name of itself, but I think more interestingly, when she then wrote books post Harry Potter, she picked another name because she wanted to have a level of anonymity so people would focus on the books, not her.
Is that, there you go, you're done? Okay.
Ooh, that was close.
I was wondering whether you would make it to the minute, I won't lie. I was concerned for you. Felicity, what do you reckon?
I'm going to side with Kieran on this one. I think for me, I think there are some very persuasive arguments from Flora, which I was quite impressed by, but I think for me it feels weird to now look back at history and start changing people's names without knowing whether that's what they actually would want. That feels a bit sort of creepy for me. So I think if, for whatever reason, I think if Mary Ann Evans published under George Eliot, I think we should keep George Eliot, I would say.
And to be honest, in some cases, I've only just learnt the names of the authors from certain books, and to have to learn a new set of authors would totally throw me off. It's a really interesting debate. I think I would just about side with Kieran. I think Flora was well argued there. But really, it's up to the listeners, I suppose. So let us know what you think. Go respond to the poll at theweekjunior.co.uk/poll or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk with a video clip explaining which side of the debate you support and why, and we might play out in next week's show. So last week on the podcast, we debated whether summer is better than winter, and it was incredibly close, with 51% saying summer was best, compared to 49% who preferred winter. Here's what some of you had to say.
So Penny emailed us this brilliant video clip explaining why she prefers winter.
Hi, my name is Penny, and I prefer winter over summer because my birthday's in winter, and you can't have fun with snowing. Summer. I love Christmas too, and getting presents is really fun. I also love the fireworks on New Year.
Olive, age 10, wrote in an email, I think summer is better than winter because in summer the weather isn't always good, but it's more likely to be sunny in summer than snowy in winter. Also, going on a summer holiday is like having a 3 or 4 day Christmas, and the holidays last longer in summer, so you can spend more time having fun with family and friends.
Freddie, aged 8, also got in touch by email explaining, summer is my favourite season because I can stay outside mostly all the time and keeps me fit and healthy. Electra added, I like the cold weather better because it isn't too hot, but you also might get snow. In the summer, you're always complaining, but in winter, you're either celebrating, enjoying the sun, or enjoying the snow.
Lily commented, winter is better than summer because of the tree, Christmas advent calendars, playing in the snow, and so much more. Plus, I am more of a video gamer, so winter is great, but summer is good as well because of my birthday and going to the Isle of Wight. And I'm actually writing my review in the Isle of Wight. So there we go.
Oh, lovely. Hello to everybody listening in the Isle of Wight as well. That was a very tough debate too. So remember, get involved. This is your chance to get heard on the podcast. Grab a grown-up, record a video telling us what you think of this week's debate and send it in to us at hello@theweekjunior.co.uk, and we could play it out on next week's show. You will be famous. Now it's time to reveal our real or rubbish story. Kieran, can you remind me again, please?
Yes, the story is that a guy called Thomas Rossetti sent in a new flag for the state of Mississippi in the US, which features at the centre a giant mosquito, and it won the competition to become the state's new flag.
I don't like it. It feels ridiculous that somebody would pick that, because surely there would be so many other amazing designs for the flag. I mean, I get that it's important to the state, but I'm going to say this week, I'm going to say that is rubbish. That's my answer.
Okay, could I get a drum roll, please?
Yes.
It's rubbish.
Oh,
congratulations. Yes, it was entered into the competition, and it made it through to the list of finalists because of a computer error. But of course, the error was quickly realised. And if you are interested, the competition is now down to its final two flags, neither of which feature an insect of any sort.
Good old computer errors. They always give good stories, don't they? Well, I'm relieved I got that one right. And if you did too at home, give yourself a pat on the back. That's it for the Week Junior Show this week. So goodbye to Felicity.
Goodbye.
Flora.
Goodbye.
And Kieran.
Goodbye.
And drop us a comment on PopJam at the Week Junior, or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk if you want to get in touch. Plus, don't forget to rate, review and subscribe wherever it is you get your podcast from. Bye.
If you want to get your hands on a copy of the Week Junior magazine, we're offering a 6-week free trial. To get yours, head over to dennismags.co.uk/theweekjunior and use the code PODCAST.